Hello and welcome to Indie Author Answers, a podcast about self-publishing, writing, editing, marketing, social media, and all that sort of stuff for indie authors. I'm your host, Jim Heskett, and each week we'll explore the landscape of the publishing industry, and I can promise you I'll go off topic. On this podcast, I will, live on the air, edit my trunk novel, The Problematic Virtue, one chapter at a time. We're going to talk about what worked, what didn't work, what I could have done better, and what lessons I learned from writing it. You can follow along from the first chapter at jimheskett.com/beginning. Hello, hello, and welcome to Indie Author Answers episode 4. Let's get this puppy started. First up, I got some news to cover. The week of January 19th, doing a free promo on my Five Sons Saga series. It's a lot of S's. The whole trilogy, Five Sons of Treason, Five Sons of Sedition, and Five Sons of Anarchy, are going to be free for this week only. When I released the Five Sons in late December 2014, I didn't really do any marketing on them. I just made the first book in the series perma-free. And I've gotten quite a few downloads, but I really want to up those reviews. So I'm making the whole series free this week, so go ahead and check that out. I've arranged a Kindle Nation Daily promo for February, and I wanted to try to amass some reviews before then. I've also been finalizing the print version of my novel Reagan's Ashes, and I'm getting ready to put that up for pre-order, which is really crazy exciting. I've been working on this novel off and on for about a year, which is a long time for an indie author to be working on a project, but that pesky day job kept getting in the way. So now let's move on to the tips of the week. I talked about Scrivener, and there was one thing that I forgot to mention, one great benefit of Scrivener, particularly for indie authors, because I always see in these lists of expenses you incur as an indie, as that formatting your ebooks is one of them. And I see prices, you know, you can get real cheapy deals on Fiverr, or you can get professional formatting for $100 or $200. And that just seems crazy to me, because you can do all of that formatting for your ebooks, whether you need to put it in Mobi or EPUB or PDF or Word doc or whatever your format is. You could do all of that stuff in Scrivener. And it just takes there's a little bit of a learning curve, you know, figuring out how to arrange your chapters and how to insert art. But there are oodles and oodles of free tutorials on the interwebs about how to do all that kind of stuff. So for what is Scrivener, like $40-$50 for that kind of investment, and then a few hours of learning how to format your books, you don't ever have to pay to format again. And then here's a little case scenario. Let's say that you write your book in Word, and then you pay someone $50 to format it and get it all into, you know, Mobi and EPUB, and then you upload it, and then you find out that there's a typo, or you accidentally left out a chapter or something horrible like that, and you need to get a new version uploaded to Amazon or Kobo or whatever right away. Well, if you had to pay someone to format your book, you're going to have to create a new version of Word and then contact the person, have them reformatted, and probably pay again. Where if you've already got it formatted in Scrivener, it's just a few clicks to get a new version. Easy peasy. And again, Scrivener's not paying me anything, but it would be awesome if they wanted to send me a check, because I am a Scrivener evangelist. And because we have a very short chapter to read in The Problematic Virtue this week, I'm going to do a second tip, 2-for-1 bonus. You're really getting your money's worth in this episode today. So I want to talk about an app that I use on my phone called GoalStreaks. And this app goes by Jerry Seinfeld's productivity method of don't break the chain. Now, a lot of you have probably already heard of this, but if you haven't, it is incredible. Jerry Seinfeld created this idea that to get yourself on a streak of something, you get a big calendar, you get a big wall calendar, you tape it up in your apartment or house, and then every day that you accomplish your goal, you put an X on that day. And then when you do that goal the second day, you put a second X and you draw a line through them. And the idea is you just don't break the streak. I've been subscribing to this method for a couple of years now. And about that app is called Goal Streaks. And that's just a way to track this on my phone. You can set up different goals. And then every day you achieve this goal, you just tap the date and it puts an X, and then you can see the chain. And you can set parameters. So I have, for my writing goal, that I need to do something for my writing 5 out of 7 days every week. And I've been keeping this streak alive for over 700 days, that over the last 700 days, 5 out of every 7 days per week that I've written. And so it's great to be able to see it visually. And part of it is that if it's, you know, most of the way through the week and I've only written for 3 days, I kind of feel guilty and I really don't want to break the chain. It's pretty incredible how powerful that is, actually. And again, Goal Streaks isn't paying me anything, but it would be super awesome if they did. All right, cool. So let's get into the problematic virtue. Chapter 3, part 3 of, I think I split the 97,000 word novel into 71 parts. So this is part 3. And again, if you're just joining us on the podcast, one of the main things that I do here is that I'm going to take the first novel that I ever wrote, The Problematic Virtue, and read and critique it live on the air. And this messy slop of a novel, we're going to edit it together, and I'll talk about what I learned, what works in it, what doesn't work, how, and hopefully that will benefit you guys. All right, like I said, today's chapter is short. It's only 781 words, so I'll go through and read it, and then we'll go back through a paragraph at a time and critique it. Here we go. Chapter 3, Brian. Brian left Heather's apartment in the campus-adjacent area of Boulder known as The Hill and returned along a bike path toward campus while fingering the diminished bag of good weed in his pocket. He had dribbled some Visine in each eye before leaving Heather's apartment, which had accomplished little. His eyes, or at least the tiny slit of each that remained open, were streaked with red lines like bloody river tributaries against a white landscape. Following the path across campus, he kept his eyes on his feet, which caused two separate near-miss incidences with bicycles. He bumped into his friend Matt and made plans to go paintballing with him and his crew the following weekend. By the time he got to his dorm, he forgot all about the plans. He and Heather had smoked joint after joint, which left him a few shades below a normal mental capacity. As he entered Cheyenne Arapaho Hall, also known as the Shy-Ho, also known as the Ghetto, he wondered if anyone would smell it on him. At the third floor, his floor, he sauntered down the hall, less affected by the chaos. As he approached the room belonging to the kid with the spiky blonde hair, Brian found him atonally plucking at his guitar. Brian decided to stop in and say hello. The preppy-looking young man was sitting on the edge of one of the twin beds, lost in thought while staring at a Radiohead poster on his wall. Brian peered into the doorway. "Hey man, I'm Brian." The kid maintained eye contact with the poster. "The RA, right? Am I doing something wrong?" Brian might have been annoyed by this a few hours before, but right now it amused him. "I'm not the enemy," he said. "I was just cruising around the floor and I wanted to stop by and say hi." He nodded towards the Radiohead poster. "You a big fan, Radiohead?" "Pretty much my favorite band." "Ever seen a live show?" The kid finally took notice of him. "I saw them at Red Rocks last time they played there and got a handjob from some chick I didn't even know in the John. Best night of my life." Brian laughed, even though the kid was probably lying. Brian entered the room and rearranged a few boxes to make space on the opposite bed. "Do you know where my roommate is?" Alex said. "I'm supposed to have a roommate." "Maybe just not moved in yet. Don't worry, he'll come around eventually." "So what's your name?" The kid scooted his guitar closer up on his thigh towards his body, wearing it as a shield. "I'm Alex. I got their new album early off the internet. Radiohead, I mean. It's not even released yet." "You can do that? Get an album before it's released?" "Sometimes, yeah. You just gotta know where to look." "I could put it on if you want to hear it. I don't know, though, dude. It's all electronic and shit. Really different." "I'm not normally into that stuff, but if Radiohead does it, I'd give it a listen." "Where are you from?" Highlands Ranch, Alex said, slightly elevating his chin. Brian now understood Alex's lack of accent. Native Coloradans had no discernible differentiation in their speech as far as Brian could tell. Nice, a local. Me too. Not Highlands Ranch or anything nice like that, but Denver too, just off Colfax near downtown. The hood, eh? Brian smiled. I guess you could say that. My neighborhood wasn't too bad. Brian sensed something about this kid. Brian liked him already. Alex seemed brash and arrogant, but also unsure of himself. Brian fished in his pocket for a quarter, then laid it on the back of his index finger's knuckle and began rolling his knuckles up and down. The quarter passed from one side of his hand to the other, like a wave. Alex nodded at the quarter. What's that all about? Brian looked down at his parlor trick. I'm trying to quit smoking, or at least cut down. I just need something to do with my hands sometimes. Hmm. Whatever works for you, I guess. You want to hear that Radiohead album? Alex said. No doubt we could do that later. We have floor orientation in the common. He paused to check his watch. Crap, in 10 minutes. I gotta bounce. As he walked out the door, he turned to say, Oh, I play guitar too. Mostly blues and rock, but I've been playing for a while and I could show you some stuff if you want to jam sometime. Alex wiggled his head, apparently unaffected. Sure, whatever. That's fine, dude. All right, so now let's go back and talk about what happened in this chapter. So we have Brian's POV again, which is a good thing because if he's the main protagonist of the story, we don't want to stray too far. If you remember last week, we were in Miguel's POV, so this is something I would definitely recommend. Try to get your readers to know your main character as much as possible before going out into other POVs. So right away, if you remember last time, Brian got a call from Heather, and he didn't want to go over to her apartment, but he did anyway. So we start here where he's leaving her apartment, and he dribbles some Visine in his eye. And there's one thing if you notice here, Brian left Heather's apartment in the campus-adjacent area of Boulder known as The Hill and returned along a bike path towards campus while fingering the diminished bag of good weed in his pocket. Diminished there sounds kind of funny, but what I wanted to talk about was it says he had dribbled some Visine in each eye. Now, I talked before about the distant POV, and I think this is a good example of it. I've seen some writers who use contractions in their description and some who don't, and I think it's fine to really do it either way, but in this case where I said he had dribbled some Visine, it feels a little distant from Brian's POV, so I think it would have worked better if I'd said he'd dribbled some Visine in each eye. Then we have describing his eyes where it says they were streaked with red lines like bloody river tributaries against a white landscape. And I remember when I wrote this, you know, 5 years ago, I was really happy with this simile here, bloody river tributaries against a white landscape. But whenever you do these kind of metaphors, these kind of similes, they need to be in your main character's POV, because this implies that Brian has some kind of experience with river tributaries against a white landscape. That this is, because I'm using this as a simile for Brian's POV, this is something that he's thinking about. And I don't really know that Brian is like this, but it was just something that I thought of at the time. So then he's walking across campus, and he has two separate near-miss incidences with bicycles, which this is foreshadowing for something that happens much, much later. And I don't really know if it's important, because I don't think that when the bicycle incident happens much later on in the novel that readers would remember this, but I think I put it in here just so I could say that there was some kind of foreshadowing. Brian encounters his friends Matt and makes plans to go paintballing, which is also foreshadowing, as there are two subsequent chapters that deal with paintballing, and they're very important to the plot. And they're also trying to demonstrate character arc, and we'll get into that much later on in the book. So talk about he and Heather smoking joint after joint, which left him a few shades below normal mental capacity, which is also kind of a strange phrase and not really in Brian's POV. It's stuffy, and it doesn't really work here. Then he goes into Cheyenne Arapaho Hall. And one thing I should point about this is that I've never actually been in Cheyenne Arapaho Hall. I talked to one person about that dorm, but, you know, I don't even know what it looks like inside, which I don't know if it's terribly important to really know the setting that much, because the placement of things in the dorm and the arrangement in the dorm isn't really important to the plot. But some people might think that it's really important to go to the places that you're describing in your novel. On that note, I can say that Google Maps Street View has been an amazing boon for writers, because I can really describe any outdoor setting in the world and go there on Google Maps, which is really awesome. Then Brian decides to go visit the kid with the spiky blonde hair, the preppy looking young man. There is a lot of telling in this chapter that I've noticed now that I'm reading it. He's a preppy looking young man. And then I'll talk about it more when I get to that in a couple pages. So Brian introduces himself. Then the kid maintains the eye contact. He says, the RA, right? Am I doing something wrong? So we know, I talked last week about how I cut a chapter out where Alex was arguing with his parents about bed sheets. But I think we can see from this that this kid doesn't really trust Brian because he's the RA, which, you know, implies that the kid is younger, Brian's a little bit older. So we know that the kid is distrustful. He says, am I doing something wrong? Brian tries to relate to him by saying, I'm not the enemy and I was just cruising around the floor. Then they bond a little bit over Radiohead. And when the kid says, I saw them at Red Rocks last time they played there, got a hand job in the John, best night of my life. And then the line is, after that, is Brian laughed, even though the kid was probably lying. Now, when I was planning the scene, I knew that, yes, Alex is lying about getting a hand job in the John. But I couldn't really think of a good way for Brian to suspect that he was lying about it. What I would do differently now would probably be when Alex says this line, to give him some kind of verbal tics, you know, like his eyes look away, or he, you know, something that indicates that he looks like he's lying so that Brian could assume that he's lying. But here, where it says Brian laughed, even though the kid was probably lying, that's just straight up telling. So I could have done that a lot better. Then, so Brian laughed even though the kid was probably lying. Brian entered the room and rearranged a few boxes to make space on the opposite bed. Do you know where my roommate is? Alex said. I'm supposed to have a roommate. And if you notice, there's a pretty big error in this sentence where, because we're in Brian's POV, and Brian doesn't know this kid's name, but I use it here where I say Alex said. And you can even notice it even more a couple paragraphs because Brian just asks him, his name. So they talk about the roommate. The kid says, I'm Alex, and they said, I got their new album early off the internet. It's not released yet. You can do that. Get an album before it's released. And if you remember, I just mentioned it in the first chapter we critiqued, that this book is set in the year 2000. And I did that for a number of reasons. Most importantly, because I wanted to set it pre-Facebook and MySpace. Because a huge part of the plot hinges on the idea of Brian not knowing something about somebody that in the present day, in 2015, you could easily look up on social media. It's kind of a flimsy plot point, but we'll talk about that more when we get there later in the book. So then they talk about where they're from, and Alex says he's from Highlands Ranch, with a slightly elevating his chin. And what I'm attempting to do there is demonstrate that Alex is proud of being from Highlands Ranch and that he's kind of stuck up. But I'm not sure if the fact that he slightly elevates his chin when he says that gets it across. I probably could have done that better. And then there's a reference to Brian being an accent collector about Alex's lack of accent. And the phrase, no discernible differentiation in their speech, is, again, an example of distant POV, because I don't think Brian would really think like that. So then we learn from Alex is from a nice neighborhood, and Brian is from a shitty neighborhood. even though he says that Brian smiled, I guess you could say that my neighborhood wasn't too bad. So we know from chapter one that Brian is worried about money. He's worried about his financial aid. So we know that Brian is from a poor family. He doesn't have much money. And then in that same paragraph, we have straight up telling about Alex, which is really awful. Alex seemed brash and arrogant, but also unsure of himself. And this is really crappy writing because Brian just met Alex 2 minutes ago. And so the fact that he can know these things about Alex already means Brian's some kind of judgment savant about people. So if I were to do this over again, I would axe that line completely. Alex seemed brash, arrogant, but also unsure of himself. And I think I was trying to compensate for cutting out the previous chapter with Alex arguing with his parents. So I think I did a better job of showing Alex being brash, arrogant, and insecure in that chapter. But maybe this was my attempt just to try to sum up Alex's personality that I had to cut out. So then Brian does this thing with the quarter passing along from one side of his hands to the other, which is kind of strange. This just seems to happen out of nowhere. What I'm trying to set up here, and what's important later in the story, is that Brian is really good with his hands, like he can do magic. And that's an important plot point. And so this is me trying to introduce it, but it seems strange because it's kind of out of nowhere. They're talking, then he just takes a pocket out of his quarter and starts doing this. And Brian explains that he's trying to quit smoking or cut down. And then Brian has to attend to his duties as the RA. He wants to bond with Alex over playing guitar. And Alex seems like he really couldn't care less. So you see there we have some things that work, some things that don't work. Like I said, there was a lot of telling in that chapter. I packed a whole lot of exposition into 781 words. But part of that is because, well, you could argue that Brian and Alex meeting is the inciting incident of this book, because the book is really about Brian and Alex's relationship and how it changes over the years. And part of what I'm trying to do is to set up that Brian will become a mentor to Alex. And so that's the introduction of playing guitar. And then Brian's oblivious about pirating stuff off the internet. And Alex is sort of, even though they're only a couple years apart, Alex is younger generation and Brian is older generation. That's all we're going to do for this week. We'll keep this episode short and sweet. I really thank you for listening. If you want to go back and start at the beginning where we started reading this, go to jimeskin.com/beginning. You can go to indieauthoranswers.com and click to see the newest episode. Check us out on iTunes and Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now get ready for the theme song. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you found us. Check out the show at indieauthoranswers.com. Also, check out jimheskett.com and sign up for the email list to get notified of new episodes and freebie goodies. Like the Indie Author Answers Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at indieanswers. I appreciate you spending your time with me. Now go out there and write. Do it. Jim says so.